Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and 50 years ago today, the police shooting of a 15-year-old black student sparked a six-day riot in Harlem, days of violence in New York City. This is a clip from the WNYC archives of then New York NAACP leader Basil Paterson, recorded in July of 1964 on why it happened.
First of all, the warning was given to Commissioner Murphy that Harlem was a powder keg a long time ago. And his only response was, I attended a dinner no more than 2 months ago. Well, his response was, don't worry about a long, hot summer. We're going to have a cool, calm, constructive summer. But if the worst comes, we're prepared. I think that anybody who was in Harlem over the last weekend knows that the police department was not prepared.
That was Basil Paterson. The year before he was elected to the New York State Senate, at a panel discussion on July 26, 1964, that aired on the station called Who Speaks for Harlem? We got that today courtesy of the New York City Municipal Archive. The panel was convened in response to those Harlem riots that we're about to revisit now as part of our 50-year civil rights history series. On July 16, 1964, 50 years ago today, a 15-year-old black student, James Powell, was shot and killed by an off-duty white police officer, Lieutenant Thomas Gilligan. Hundreds of his classmates took to the street in protest. By July 18th, the protests turned to much more violence. For 6 nights, Harlem and Bed-Stuy were barraged with looting and rioting and police brutality. In the end, one person was dead and several hundred were left injured and arrested. This was one of several race riots that took place around the country in that so-called long, hot summer of 1964. We will play some more clips from the archive from that time coming up. But what is the 1964 Harlem riots legacy 50 years later? With us now are Peniel Joseph, professor of history at Tufts University, who has been doing the occasional 50-year civil rights history series with us since last year, and David Paterson, former governor of New York, and son of Basil Paterson, who you just heard in that clip and we'll hear more of coming up. Peniel Joseph, David Paterson, welcome back to WNYC. Hi there.
Thank you, Brian.
Hey, Brian.
And let me jump right in to this question for you, David Paterson. We heard that 50-year-old clip of your father. We'll hear some more from him in a minute. You were a little kid. Do you remember the incident and the riots?
I remember the whole thing. And I remember that it wasn't just the shooting of the young man, James Powell, who was 15. It was that the police officer, Gilligan, was alleged to have kicked the body to make sure he was dead. And that single act started a riot on the scene. And, you know, what's interesting about this is that, you know, in 1992, after the Rodney King decision, there were some riots all over the country. And, you know, there have been other incidents where people's outrage about verdicts and that type of thing spilled over. But this was a direct response to an act of brutality that people in that neighborhood in Harlem believed to be unnecessary. And it was a continuation of a treatment of the Harlem community and Harlem's all over New York State by the police. Now, what's interesting is that it was stunning, I must tell you, Brian, to hear that quote from my father, who passed away on April 16th of this year. But only last year was I informed by him, and it was after the verdict in the George Zimmerman acquittal, that when my father was 16 years old, he was pistol whipped by a police officer openly in public, and that the NAACP came to his home and asked his family if they would participate in a lawsuit, and his father would not permit them to do it because he said, the police know who my son is, and as soon as there's a lawsuit, something else is going to happen to him. And that's the kind of feeling of that could become latent in terms of reacting in the way people reacted many years later, just decades of abuse.
It's an incredible story. Peniel Joseph, you're younger. You were not around at the time, but, of course, you're a historian of this kind of thing. More of our history series together has been focused on the South when we talk about civil rights and that era. Have you studied Harlem 1964?
Oh, no, absolutely. And I write about this in my first book, Waiting Till the Midnight Hour, Brian. And the interesting thing is that on July 19th, 3 days after Gilligan shoots James Powell, there's a massive meeting in Harlem at Mount Morris Presbyterian Church. And there's going to be community activists, people like Jesse Gray, the Harlem rent strike leader, and people from CORE. The street speaker, Eddie Porkchop Davis, is there. And so is Bayard Rustin and James Farmer of CORE. And what's interesting is that the theme of the meeting is Harlem, Mississippi? That's the question. So this is the same summer of Freedom Summer, which we just talked about 2 weeks ago. And the violence is triggered by police brutality. And that summer, not only does Harlem burn, but St. Louis and Rochester, New York, parts of New Jersey and Philadelphia as well. So the interesting thing about 64 is 64, in a way, is ground zero for the urban riots or rebellions or civil disturbances, depending on your ideological perspective, that we're going to see in the 60s. But we had really started seeing this, Brian, in 63 in Birmingham, right? So the rioting actually starts first in the South and spreads north. But it's very important that it's police brutality, but that it's also poverty that is connected to these riots or these rebellions in 64.
Listeners, anyone listening right now who was around for the Harlem riots, maybe Harlem resident at that time, or Bedford-Stuyvesant, where some of this also took place, though they got known as the Harlem riots, we would like to hear your memories. 212-433-WNYC.
You know,
maybe you were a participant.
You know, Brian, it's very interesting that on that same date that Peniel refers to, July 19th, when they had this meeting, earlier that day, Gabe Pressman from WNBC-TV interviewed James Farmer, Bayard Rustin, a well-known civil rights leader named Cleveland Robinson, and my father, Basil Patterson, on an hour-long program on his regular Sunday show, and it featured this type of discussion. And what the participants thought was interesting is they never could get on the show to talk about some of the problems right in New York City, and it was a local show, until there was a riot.
Until there was a riot. And you know what? We have several excerpts, I don't know if you knew this, from that show. So let's play one right now. This is another minute and a half of your father. I think this is the exact show that you're talking about. This is an NBC show, and it's Basil Patterson. From the archives, July 26, 1964, from a panel discussion called Who Speaks for Harlem?
There's almost a chronicle of events that's occurred. We had initially the call for new legislation by Governor Rockefeller. Now, the people in Harlem interpreted those two new laws, and the ones I'm referring to specifically, of course, are the so-called stop and search law and the no-knock search warrant bill. Now, these laws went into effect amid a hue and cry against them from Harlem. Only Harlem seemed to be opposing them. There are many people, and quite frankly, it's very interesting to many of us who followed the progress on these bills, that seems to be accepted by many persons who seem to be rather well-versed in constitutional law, that at least one of them is definitely unconstitutional, the stop and search. And yet, it seemed it became an issue whether it's going to be the people of Harlem opposing these bills or whether they're going to be passed under the aegis of the law enforcement officials. Now, the people of Harlem objected to this, but it went right ahead. There were not even real hearings in the state legislature. We followed this up, and we came down to support the Weiss bill in the city council. And at that time, those of us who were there spent 8.5 hours trying to get our message across that if even the police brutality that has been practiced was being exaggerated, here was an opportunity for the city administration to at least say to the people, we are going to give you an opportunity to make your complaints. And what did we see? A demonstration by New York City Police Department en masse at City Hall opposing and objecting.
So Basil Patterson, July 26, 1964, David Patterson with us now, and historian Peniel Joseph. Governor, was this from the same show that you were thinking of? First question.
Yes, I remember that the show was on a Sunday. And it was, I guess, about a week after the meeting that Peniel is referring to.
And second question, did you hear him refer to the constitutionally questionable practice of stop and search? Does that sound a little familiar?
60 years later, still debating that issue. But you see, what I think is the case now is there have been similar incidents. There's the Romali Graham shooting in the Bronx and that type of thing. But the reason that you don't see people taking to the streets the way you used to is that now many of them are in the government. There are places to go. There are people even in the police department itself who understand the problem. And I think once that happens, you get a much different reaction than you might have 50 years ago.
And we have more clips from the archive to play. One of the activists who you mentioned, Jesse Gray, and one of then-Mayor Robert Wagner. But, Peniel Joseph, do you want to piggyback on what David Patterson was just saying about the difference between now and then?
Oh, yeah, certainly. I think what's interesting 50 years ago is that when we look at this from a panoramic perspective, people like Basil Patterson, who are real heroic activists, there were also local leaders, Mae Mallory, William Epton, Conrad Lynn, Jesse Gray, all these activists who wanted to talk about issues of race and police brutality and economic justice. And this riot really provided a context for them to have that conversation. At the national level, we should remember Lyndon Johnson sends the FBI into Harlem on Monday, July 20th. And the day after Basil Patterson and that news show was on, Martin Luther King Jr. arrives in Harlem Monday, July 27th, and he tries to broker a peace treaty between City Hall and Harlem activists. And King asks for a civilian review board, which is something that Basil Patterson and other activists in Harlem wanted. That doesn't happen, but there's going to be really national rallies in support of Harlem, but the newspapers are going to complain that this is all a communist conspiracy, which is very, very interesting as well. One thing we should note, too, is Malcolm X, who many people look to as a leader, was actually in Africa when the riots occurred. He's in Cairo with the Organization of African Unity, pleading with the OAU to look upon the black struggle in America as a human rights struggle and not just a civil rights struggle.
And the mayor of New York at the time, Robert Wagner, was in Geneva, Switzerland when the riots broke out. Ironically, he was there, quote, to make an address on poverty and unemployment as related to discrimination and civil rights, unquote. That was the official billing of his speech at an international conference. Meanwhile, race riots were happening in his own backyard. And here's 45 seconds of what Mayor Wagner had to say from there.
Of all of the groups in America, Negroes have the most to gain from law and order. The Supreme Court decision of 1954 is law and order. Where would civil rights be without that decision, without that law and order? The Civil Rights Bill just passed in Congress and signed by President Johnson is law and order. The New York City law outlawing discrimination in housing passed under my administration is law and order. Without law and order, Negro and civil rights progress would be set back half a century. Law and order are the Negro's best friend. Make no mistake about that.
Law and order, which for people who know the history of that time was a phrase that didn't just mean law and didn't just mean order, but it was kind of a code word used by segregationist governors in the South at the time. Very surprising to hear it out of the mouth of the New York City mayor of the time. But here in response, we go back to that Channel 4 Gay Pressman special for a clip of Jesse Gray responding directly as an activist identified on the show as a, quote, Negro leader, responding to Mayor Wagner.
I don't know what the mayor is talking about. Law and order is always essential. But law and order is one thing. It's one thing when the cops are shooting down your women and children. You're a poor man, and you're a man with no guts to stand by and see your women and children being fired upon and shot down without doing something about it. And if he called law and order standing by while the women and children are being shot down by a mass of screaming racist police, well, then the mayor's sick like he's always been.
Jesse Gray, and my understanding, just to be really clear about what media we're talking about here, that was, I believe, from a documentary that followed the Gay Pressman panel discussion. And our archivist tells us that in some context, we think that Channel 4 then gave WNYC, then the municipally owned radio station, permission to rebroadcast some of it because it was so important and so special. So that's a little of the archival history. Peniel, Joseph, do you want to talk about the phrase law and order at the in the context of that time?
Oh, certainly. In the 1960s, and Richard Nixon is going to use this brilliantly, law and order is code for containing black protest and black perceptions of black violence and black rage as well. So when we think about the mayor, New York City mayor, and this is 18 months before John Lindsay becomes sort of the young liberal mayor of New York City for two terms, a northern mayor using that is very, very telling. But when we go back to Jesse Gray, Gray is part, along with people like Basil Patterson, Gray is a grassroots activist, whereas Basil Patterson is part of that generation that really got access and became state representatives. They were head of the NAACP. People like Percy Sutton, Basil Patterson, David Dinkins. So those were very, very heroic figures who were trying to be incorporated and gain access to these political institutions. People like Jesse Gray and Bill Epton and Mae Mallory, these were your street organizers and your street fighters. And they all come together, including with Dr. King, to express their outrage at what happens in Harlem. And there's actually great footage of tape of Lyndon Johnson speaking about the Harlem riots with J. Edgar Hoover, because he's trying to figure out what to do, should he send the FBI in? And eventually he sends the FBI in, and they're trying to investigate connections between whether the black Muslims and other extremist groups were behind this. So the interesting part about this, the riot is spontaneous. It's because of all this oppression, but the government is trying to figure out, is there a black militant who somehow has spurred this riot through remote control or some group that's going to start guerrilla warfare right here in the U.S.?
So one more...
And also the main thrust is to try to connect it to the Communist Party.
Yes.
And there were a number of civil rights leaders that did have a connection with the Communist Party. And although now it's almost anachronistic, when you're being abused at this level, who cares what party it is that's coming in if they appear to be helping? Remember, we were helping Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan when we thought we were fighting communism. So, you know, when this the title communist was just put on anybody that you didn't like to try to prevent them from being heard.
Oh, and they still call Obama Marxist today. That same language gets used for whatever, you know, non-right-wing policy people.
Although it lacks attraction these days.
I guess, in most circles. We have a minute left. Let's see. David Patterson, all right, clear something up for us. Your father's name, Basil or Basil?
His name was Basil.
I always thought Basil was the spice, Basil was the name. So
yes.
So I guess. So do you want to say a word about, since he did pass this year, his legacy and your career in the shadow and, you know, building on him in the next generation? We have about 45 seconds.
Well, I think that now the Dinkins and Rangel, the Gang of Four and all that, they're perceived as these kind of like power brokers politically. But when you really examine history, as Peniel does all the time, you see that they were the activists of their day, and they were considered in their day the way one might have considered perhaps Reverend Al Sharpton and others of, mm-hmm. of a modern era. But they had to be that way. It was the only way to try to fight an oppressive segregation that still existed even though the Supreme Court decisions were made.
The Harlem riots. Yeah, go ahead, Peniel. 15 seconds.
And when
seconds.
We think about the gentrification of Harlem right now in 2014, it's important to understand the journey that Harlem has taken in terms of this struggle for racial economic justice.
Tufts University historian Peniel Joseph will continue to join us from time to time as we do our occasional 50-year civil rights series spanning from 1963 to 1965, so through 2015 here in the series. And former Governor David Patterson, great to talk to both of you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian. It's a wonderful show.
Thanks, Brian.